Ready to wrap up paper 118. We're in section 10. We're ready to start paragraph 8, which is on old single column, page 1305. All right, so now before we jump in, let's just remind ourselves what happened in those first seven paragraphs. Because it was a, as we discussed, it's a very, let's say it this way. It's about as direct an attempt as they make to get you to recognize the obvious. In regard to God the Mother. I mean, they did everything except, literally install a flashing neon sign in the midst of those seven paragraphs, flashing God the Mother. Okay, remember what they did. They, were really anchoring this effort off of you beginning to, looking for and recognizing keywords. In those seven paragraphs, they used the name Trinity 6 times. They used the word total 8 times. And if you count the section title, they used the word function 10 times. Okay. if that wasn't enough, they basically directly paralleled that, that key sentence back to the functionality of the Trinity back there in paper 10 that we've pointed to for a while, that key where they, they give the totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic over-control. Okay. So they directly keyed you back to that. And just for good measure, they even used the word over-control one time. Okay. And then, they very directly said that when you contemplate all of that, you remember, they said it's valid to look at all of that in the viewpoint of personalized deity as God. Remember that sentence in there. And then just for good measure, they even reminded us that, just right after that supreme deity, remember they use that expression, that supreme deity has two facets, and the name of one of those facets is the Almighty. Okay, so all of that, you put all of that together, what is it? It's a flashing neon sign. Recognize God the Mother. And begin to understand these keywords. That was why, I made a point of putting this, this little touchstone, together, so that it can begin to be something that is just intuitive in your recognition of this differential between God functioning as Father and God functioning as Mother. That's how they started us out, and they're doing this in the context of providence, and basically showing us that the old notion of providence, if it's liberated from immature, ignorant, superstitious notions, has a truth to it. And that truth is made manifest because of God the Mother, not because of God the Father. God the Father, you know, intervenes, you know, relative to individuals. He doesn't intervene in that providential sense, you know, in the sense of the whole, what's best for the functionality of the whole. That's God the Mother. All right, so that's what they led us up to, and then let's see where they take us next. So starting with that that paragraph, as the mechanisms.
As the mechanisms of the grand universe are perfected to a point of final precision through the overcontrol of mind, and as creature mind ascends to the perfection of divinity attainment through perfected integration with spirit, and as the supreme consequently emerges as an actual unifier of all these universe phenomena, so does providence become increasingly discernible.
And just so, because it was touching, this is the reason this is italicized there, actually harkening back to that last paragraph we read last time. So just want to put that fresh in your memory again. Remember how that paragraph started out. You know, that what man calls providence is all too often the product of his own imagination. Okay? But there is actual providence.
Yes.
Okay? Okay? Right. That it's italicized to make sure that you're reinforcing the contrast. That we're not talking about some magical, you know, simplistic, childish notion of providence.
Fancy.
You know, we're talking about true providence that is made actual through the functioning of first God the Mother, and then down through the Almighty Supreme. And then into the things, all things, matter, mind, and spirit things, all things. Remember, they gave us that extensive list, every kind of thing that you could think of, that complete providence that is progressively manifesting as the grand universe moves towards light and life. Because more and more God the Mother is coordinating it into a whole, everything.
Some of the amazingly fortuitous conditions occasionally prevailing on the evolutionary worlds may be due to the gradually emerging presence of the Supreme, the foretasting of his future universe activities. Most of what a mortal would call providential is not. His judgment of such matters is very handicapped by lack of far-sighted vision into the true meanings of the circumstances of life. Much of what a mortal would call good luck might really be bad luck. The smile of fortune that bestows unearned leisure and undeserved wealth may be the greatest of human afflictions. The apparent cruelty of a perverse fate that heaps tribulation upon some suffering mortal may in reality be the tempering fire that is transmuting the soft iron of immature personality into the tempered steel of real character.
Okay. So I want to stress this little point because they're going to build on it if it isn't obvious. This lack of far-sighted vision into the true meanings of the circumstances of life. You know, we've stressed this a lot. When you see that word farsighted, you know, or if you see the word foresight, what are they referring to? A characteristic of selves? No. It's a characteristic that only comes into play when there's personality in play. And like we've stressed so much. You know, it's sad to record that so little, you know, even though it's, there's a limit how much personality we can manifest in this short life, but still it's sad to record that even what little we could, we don't. We've become self-satisfied. Okay? And we've begun to predicate more and more of our whole civilization on self and our whole sense of everything. on what is really just a self view, or at best an immature personality view, like they're saying at the end. Just think about that whole little example they give. A self sees it in that backward way. If the self is all happy in the moment, the self is convinced that that's good. That might be the worst thing possible for you, in a bigger sense. Do you have the courage to recognize the true God and the true reality in which we exist, that isn't about just coddling you in the moment as an immature personality, i.e. just mostly a self? Do you have the courage to face the difficulties of growth and begin to see yourself in a truer light? Someone who needs a lot of right choosing. And now is a good time to start. looking for the path of least resistance is what a self does. That's not what a person does. That's not godlikeness. Godlikeness steers right into the difficulty. And it penetrates through it because of spiritual strength. And the self, just merely as a self, can just have fuzzy spiritual feeling. It can't have spiritual strength, because only personality can grip spirit and turn it into fibers that make you strong. Yourself can't grip it. And so you're just kind of awash in it, and it may give you a fuzzy feeling. But that doesn't get you very far when, the tsunami is coming at you. You're going to need more than just a fuzzy feeling. And again, to see it in the big picture. Like just thinking of that example. Yeah, well, most likely if the tsunami is coming at you, you're going to die. And so your thought is, what's good is spiritual strength? Well, the point is not to somehow not die. All mortal selves die. The point is to begin to see yourself in a context that transcends your mortalness. The courage born of a more eternalized point of view. So that even if you die today, you know that's of no real consequence to you. And what you're trying to do, engage God and be more real, and have something that a mere self can't have. Can you get to the point where you can read that last phrase and not be afraid? Can you do what Jesus said, fear not, when you read that you might be being put into tempering fire that's going to transmute your soft iron of immature personality into tempered steel of real character? You can't be afraid of that. Okay, so now we all know that God is right there with us. God the Father has put a fragment of himself within us to go through that tempering process. We're not alone. But the real point of what we're reading is there's something besides that too. There's the hand that guides the whole. There's God the Mother also. And the more that you have a personal character and not just a mere self, aren't just a mere self, the more that you will find yourself coincidentally being part of her guidance of the whole. Because that, what we just said in the meditation again, remind you of that, that we're connected with each other through the individuality of the whole, through her, if you're real. If you have personal character, then she can link you together into the system, and you'll benefit from the system. You won't just be, you know, seem to be a forgotten cork bobbing about on the high seas. Yeah. Things will come into play, you know, not that the things that an ease seeking self is looking for, but real things, things that will help you with this process of becoming tempered steel. So, I wanted to flesh that out. Just so, get to the point where you can really talk about a paragraph like that in your mind with both fundamental expressions of God in play, God the Father and God the Mother, and how the two are working with you to make you what you are not, but what they want you to be.
Chris?
Yeah.
They use a metaphor of soft iron and steel. I think I read somewhere that process, going from soft iron, you need only 5% carbon to transmute it into steel. And so the struggles that we have are not all consuming. Mm-hmm. They're episodic, they're periodic, but it's enough to change us into a whole new real character.
On a normal world, you know, that's the case. But, you know, we all know that, you know, you're going to get a little bit more, of someone pumping on the bellows, okay, on this world, okay? It's going to get hot, okay, on this world because of the rebellion and the default. So, you know, we're not just going to experience that minimum required, you know, difficulty that a normal world is, you know, carefully guided to have. The guides, you know, flew the coop. And so, you know, the constraints are off, and you're going to have to deal with some really, really rough seas at times.
There's some fancy stuff going on with iron. It's not just some additional carbon.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of stuff to it.
Sure.
That would make that analogy more fitting.
Yeah, and see, you could, I'm sure, you know, if you thought about it, you could expand that analogy the kind of steels that you can produce under these conditions that can't be produced by the normal method.
Right.
That's the point.
Yeah.
Agendonter steel.
This is your rancher steel, right.
Okay. Agendonter steel is what, you know, is what they're making here. You know, and by they, I mean the Father and the Mother, you know, because they're the overarching control and over-control, you know, like we read in that previous section, of this whole big picture. Okay.
There is a provenance in the evolving universes, and it can be discovered by creatures to just the extent that they have attained capacity to perceive the purpose of the evolving universes. Complete capacity to discern universe purposes equals the evolutionary completion of the creature and may otherwise be expressed as the attainment of the supreme within the limits of the present state of the incomplete universes.
Okay, see, now put the two paragraphs together. You know, they said that, you know, we lack farsighted vision into the true meanings of the circumstances of life. In other words, we lack relationship to God the Father. You know, we have a very limited encirclement in the Father's personality circuit. Well, you say, well, can I just desire more and then I'll have more? No, because a pint can't hold a quart. Okay, you know, capacity. Okay, the Father doesn't give you more, you know, more relationship to God the Father, you know, more consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father doesn't increase your capacity. Okay, you know, you need more space for the Father to be, you know, and it doesn't matter how much you want there to be more relationship to the Father. If you haven't supplied the favorable conditions, if you haven't made the space for the Father, there's no place for the Father to be. You have to expand the space. You have to increase your relationship with that which is capacity producing, God the Mother. Okay? That's what they're pointing out here. See, so you put those two together. You aren't just expanding your capacity just so you can say you've got a bigger head. Okay? You know, you're expanding the capacity because you want to fill it with something. Yeah. Something that requires capacity. Everything requires capacity. Even the infinite upholder requires the capacity of the infinite capacity for it to be somewhere. It can't just be nowhere. It has to be somewhere. It has to be within and filling to the margins the infinite capacity. Okay? Each of us has a downstep expression of that capacity to the limit that we've taken delight in cultivating a relationship, a greater and greater relationship with God the Mother. And if we've expanded that capacity, if we've grown the size of the temple within, then guess what? You know, the Father can stand taller within that temple. He can begin to actually spread his wings within that temple, you know, and you can start to soar. But if you've got this tiny little space because you're fearful or you're self-content, you know, what do I need a temple for? I've got myself, and I get lots of awards and adulations, and, you know, and I'm successful and blah, 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 blah. You know. Yeah. Okay.
They tie capacity into perceiving the purpose. So you're not going to see all the ins and outs of how the Supreme works probably forever. It's going to be so vast. But we can, if we get the goal, you know, we can see the trend.
Right, and, you know, there that bit at the end, you know, they're obviously alluding to this kind of two-step process of the two phases of our finite career, the first one from here to paradise, where we know we really make that first full step into relationship with God the Mother once we've passed through Havona and are standing on the aisle for the first time. But then begins, you know, the subsequent journey where you're slowly building that relationship as the universe grows. You know, see, so the first leg, you're kind of coming up to speed to where the universe is right now, you know, where the grand universe has evolved to so far. So you leave paradise on top of that. You know, you've engaged it to the fullness of what it is at that on that day. And then from that day on until the end of time, you know, the end of finite time, every notch that the grand universe moves towards light and life, you're right there, adding that into yourself, reflecting that in yourself. You know? And all of those who have achieved that first leg are doing that. And we're all going together towards a collective recognition of the Supreme. Not just the Mother, but now the Mother and the Almighty together as one, the Supreme. And then they're alluding to that there, you know, the attainment of the Supreme. But that first leg is to attain that measure of perfected relationship with that which is growing the grand universe, growing the Almighty, you know, God the Mother. You're totally up to speed, and you're ready now to engage it in the moment, in its fullness. Yeah, so just, you know, capacity. See, it's another word now. You know, and which of those three functionalities back there in paper 10 that I referred to, you know, is tied to that? Is it the cosmic overcontrol? Is it the coordinate action? Or is it the totality attitudes?
Totality?
Yeah, the totality attitudes. That's, you know, that's where the capacity component is coming in. God the Mother has a totality attitude, and so she can give you some measure. Starts out a small measure, but it is a measure of totality attitude, of capacity. grows.
The love of,
yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
The love of the Father operates directly in the heart of the individual, independent of the actions or reactions of all other individuals. The relationship is personal, man and God. The impersonal presence of deity, Almighty, Supreme, and Paradise Trinity, manifests regard for the whole, not for the part. The providence of the overcontrol of supremacy becomes increasingly apparent as the successive parts of the universe progress in the attainment of finite destinies. As the systems, constellations, universes, and superuniverses become settled in light and life, the Supreme increasingly emerges as the meaningful correlator of all that is transpiring, while the ultimate gradually emerges as the transcendental unifier of all things.
Okay. So again, you saw the word overcontrol in there. Grab a hold of that word and see the proper mother understanding, God the mother understanding of what they just said there. So they say the impersonal presence of deity. You know, like we've said many times, when you use that individuality designation, the Almighty Supreme, that's not he, that's not she, that's it. Okay? And of course, in just the pure sense, the Paradise Trinity is it. You know, that's non-personalizable deity. So just in and of itself. So they're saying those two, and when you're talking about, in supremacy here, on the Paradise Trinity, you're talking about the Trinity of Supremacy, the functioning of the Trinity relative to the Supreme level, the Trinity of Supremacy. So the Almighty Supreme and the Trinity of Supremacy, those are tied to the providence, the things, the impersonal wholeness of the things, but the over-control, that's the Universal Mother. The distinction there. To understand that distinction, it's there's two parts there. There's a providence and there's an over control. Okay. One is impersonal; it's about the things. The other, there's an over controller, the Universal Mother. Okay. So that's what's happening in that, And notice how they're bringing it all together here. You have the whole. When you're talking about providence, you're talking about the whole. Having a and so you experience providence if you have a relation to the whole. Okay. But you have that relation to the whole through the individuality of the whole. The providence doesn't just exist. There's an over-control, Universal Mother. Yep.
I found the first part of that very interesting. And it says, the love of the Father operates directly in the heart of the individual. Mm-hmm. And I've been reading a lot of references when you do a search on just heart.
Yeah.
Is that just kind of a figure of speech?
No.
Or he's really in the heart?
It's not this heart. It's not even the feelings, the level of feelings, which is often called the heart. Again, it's a word where they could have not used the word heart because it has a lot of very limited notions attached to it in human parlance. But they did because they said, no, we need to challenge them, just like we're challenging them with the word personality, the word spirit, the word soul, et cetera, et cetera. To recognize that there is a true heart. There's a, what is the word heart in truth? A true heart, a true core of your being. The temple. A literal space created by her. She is place. She creates this core in your being. Before you can have the spirit of truth or the thought adjuster come, a place has to be prepared for them. There has to be a core, a heart, a nucleus made within you, a temple within. You know, true contemplation is with, C-O-N prefix, the temple. Okay? Again, contemplation is not just a notion. You know, it could be, but it doesn't have to be. You could recognize the truth of that word. There literally is a temple within. And you could truly be with the temple and what is there in the temple. The spirit of truth and the thought adjuster are not outside the temple. You're not going to find them in the bottom part of the hourglass. Okay? The temple is the upper domain of the hourglass. Okay? They're not down there like with the they're not on the level of feelings down there in the lower part of the temple. So if you think of the heart, you know, as that level of feelings, no, that's not the true temple. Or if you think of the heart, you know, is down there, literally this heart, the foundation of the flesh. No, it's not that either. It's not down there in the bottom part of the temple. Now, if you do experience actually in the upper domain, in the true temple, that will have consequences down there. You'll feel it down to your very bones. Yeah? Because it's a profound experience. You know, and it's why humans have had a tendency to perpetuate the notion that the heart was what's really down there. It's not that mankind has never had a true experience in the heart. It's just that mankind has failed to recognize the fact from the consequences. The heart is the heart. It's not the consequences of the heart. You know? That's because the self just really knows this. And so the self can't help but think, you know, that, it's just here, you know, and there isn't any other, so it couldn't have come from anywhere. You know, the heart, see, that's the misunderstanding of the self perspective. The personality knows the truth, that the true temple is up here, you know, and true personal spiritual experiences, religious experiences, true religious experiences are up here. And they have profound consequences down here, yes. The whole reason that they get reflected down there is because the whole point of having the temple engaged to the self is that you can reflect on the cosmos and then bring that character of the cosmos down into the self. That's the whole point, to take control of the self and begin to form the self to be like the harmony that you can only see up here. It has to be linked. And so there has to be, secondary effects. Just don't make the mistake of thinking that the effects are the cause.
So in Eastern philosophy...
We never do that.
Eastern philosophy, we have the chakras and the energy centers.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're saying this, I'm thinking of, you know, the heart chakra is the first chakra above that hourglass figure. Mm-hmm. All of this being self and things to master, where this was starting to be expressive and more open. I'm just thinking, is this energy center?
I mean, without going into details and trying to totally, reconstruct chakras, notice that without even thinking about the details, there's a little measure of recognition and truth in that long ago notion, you know, and that's why it continues on to today. There is a level structure. There are levels of meaning, 6 levels of meaning. The problem is we have so many things kind of all convolved together, and the revelators are trying to get us to separate things apart, you know, separate levels of meaning from cosmic levels, and you know, it's much more complicated than any olden philosophy has. But there's obviously a measure of truth in it. You can see it right away. So you recognize the truths in a lot of these ancient ideas. Carry those truths forward, But don't put the new wine of the fifth epical revelation in the old wineskins of, you know, ancient attempts to try to see dimly the truth of reality. It's good as far as it goes, but oh, we can go so much further. You know, that's what the fifth epical revelation is here to reveal the good news of. The good news is you don't have to limit yourself to those old wineskins. You can take their truths and make them, you know, become new. Behold, all things are becoming new. The one other thing I wanted to point out in there is, like I was starting to say, notice how they've got all three things in play here in this paragraph. We have this distinct, you know, we're really focused down now. When we say except in relation to the whole, okay, yeah, the whole, you know, that the it part of it, the things, and you know, especially the level to which there's a providence in those things, so that it really is a whole and not just a bunch of parts. You know, and the Almighty Supreme and the Trinity of Supremacy are very closely related to that whole. And then I recognize there is an individuality of that whole. There's the Universal Mother. And then there's also the Universal Father. And so now see a little more clearly when we've talked about the original. You know, like back when we first started these papers on the Supreme, and they were talking about, you know, they introduced that notion trying to play off of the seven absolutes of infinity, the original, you know, the actual, and the potential. You know, we're kind of breaking the seven into three, three, and one. But, you know, we've discovered that more directly, the original is the universal one of infinity. And that original has two sides. The first center, on the one hand, the Paradise Trinity on the other hand. And back when we talked about total deity, we recognized that the universal one of infinity, unlike the infinite, there in the static level, the universal one of infinity is the origin of the individuality viewpoint. So now put these two things together. We've discovered by just working through this that the original, the individuality viewpoint origin, has two faces, two sides. So there must be two types of individuality. The first center is the origin of the individuality of the part. God the Father makes each of us, you know, real parts. I am a part. You know, so there's the individuality of the part. That's coming from the first center side. The Paradise Trinity side, that's the origin of the individuality of the whole. God the Mother. So when you're thinking, you know, so when they start talking about, see, you know, the Father operates directly in the heart of the individual. Why? Because he made you like him so he could engage you. And like him is he made you have an individuality as a part. You know, very, very definitively, not just, you know, with personality, but now with the thought adjuster, you know, an individuation, a real part. So you can engage that source of the individuality of the part. But there's the other side, the individuality of the whole. And you can engage that too. And because you can, you and I can be really connected with each other. Not just connected because we're both things and we can bump into each other. Okay? You know, we're thing-like and, you know, and hence co-it-like, you know, like the Almighty Supreme. We're real and we can connect personally through the individuality of the whole. Okay? Okay. So see, now you have, so now you have the full picture. Now that individuality viewpoint has these two expressions.
In the beginnings on an evolutionary world, the natural occurrences of the material order and the personal desires of human beings often appear to be antagonistic. Much that takes place on an evolving world is rather hard for mortal man to understand. Natural law is so often apparently cruel, heartless, and indifferent to all that is true, beautiful, and good in human comprehension. But as humanity progresses in planetary development, we observe that this viewpoint is modified by the following factors. One, man's augmenting vision, his increased understanding of the world in which he lives, his enlarging capacity for the comprehension of the material facts of time, the meaningful ideas of thought, and the valuable ideas of spiritual insight.
Ideals
of spiritual insight.
What?
See, one's ideas and the other's ideals.
Oh, did I say ideas?
Very,
ideas.
Yeah, see, very important.
Sorry. As long as men measure only by the yardstick of the things of a physical nature, they could never hope to find unity in time and space.
Okay. Yeah, pretty obviously mother-like discussion there. But notice how they led into that. It's tied to what I was just saying. We observe that this viewpoint is modified. Okay? You know you're not created with an innate unity viewpoint. Okay? So when they say viewpoint, you know what kind of a viewpoint we're talking about here. It's an individuality viewpoint. But it starts with just this individuality of the part viewpoint. Okay? The modification is adding in, getting a full individuality viewpoint. Both the individuality of the part and the individuality of the whole. And that's what they're talking about, this first step. When you're talking about material facts of time, the meaningful ideas of thought, and the valuable ideals of spiritual insight, right there, spiritual insight, we're obviously keying into, having this greater capacity so that you have this greater breadth and length and depth. So you're augmenting that individuality of the part viewpoint with the individuality of the whole viewpoint. And the only way that you can even begin to remotely have an individuality of the whole viewpoint, your capacity has to get to the point where you actually, your view spans enough of the whole that, you're even, the thought even occurs to you that there's a whole. Instead of just, if you just stay with that, that faint flicker of faith, and all you have is that tiny little conduit between you and the Father, remember we've talked about that. In that absolute link between you and God the Father, there is absolutely nothing else in there. There's no other persons in that conduit. There's no things. There's definitely no whole. It's just you and God the Father, which is cool. It's an absolute viewpoint, but its diameter is limited here, okay? And you can't let yourself get fooled by the fact that it goes from here to infinity. Therefore, you must be done, right? I mean, how could I have it longer than infinity? Yeah, well, it's only infinity in one dimension. What about the other two dimensions? They're still as small as small can be and still have it possible for it to be. You're started at the absolute smallest diameter tube, okay? Possible. If they tried to make it smaller, it would pinch off and not be there, and you would be an animal, not a human. Okay? So it, to just humbly recognize it, you can't have it any smaller than what it is when you first open your eyes and look through it. But it's, you know, but it seems like it's everything because you have no peripheral vision yet. And as soon as you can start to step back and have a more objective consciousness, you go, whoa, that's kind of limited. That bandwidth, you know, has issues. Let's expand that pipe. Let's make that bigger. And I don't do that by just, by personal desires. You notice how they put that in there? Just because I desire it, it isn't. Okay? I have to take delight in cultivating. One must do something as well as be something. Okay? The being part is the fact that there's a conduit there. The do something part. The more you supply the favorable conditions, the more it grows. Because she's capacity producing. all right, so, and then just, besides all that, they were reminding you that people even have a hard time having that viewpoint. As long as men measure only by the yardsticks of things of a physical nature, at least the first step you can take is to recognize that, that this initial thing where you assume that thingness is just about matter. Things is a more generalized phenomenon. There are mindal things, like an idea is a mindal thing. It's an actual form in the mindal energy system. It's not a material form, a mindal form, or ideals, et cetera. To expand your, at least begin to expand your recognition of the, the diversity of things. and you can do that even though you still have just a material identity. You as a point of identification for personality are still very much, a material thing. But you've been encircuited and are encircuited in mindal and spiritual. And so you can begin to have a relationship to higher things. All right, so they start with that. So you this augmenting vision, like I said, getting it so that you actually have some peripheral vision here.
Two, man's increasing control, the gradual accumulation of the knowledge of the laws of the material world, the purposes of spiritual existence, and the possibilities of the philosophic coordination of these two realities. Man, the savage, was helpless before the onslaughts of natural forces, was slavish before the cruel mastery of his own inner fears. Semi-civilized man is beginning to unlock the storehouse of the secrets of the natural realms, and his science is slowly but effectively destroying his superstitions, while at the same time providing a new and enlarged factual basis for the comprehension of the meanings of philosophy and the values of true spiritual experience. Man, the civilized, will someday achieve relative mastery of the physical forces of his planet. The love of God in his heart will be effectively outpoured as love for his fellow men, while the values of human existence will be nearing the limits of mortal capacity.
Okay, so you expanded here, you augmented the vision, and now the stuff that you've needed can fit, have a place to be. You now have a greater knowledge of the laws of the material world and the purposes of spiritual existence and the possibilities of the philosophic coordination of these three realities. More of the threefold actuality, can fit in your vision. Material, spiritual, and then the philosophic coordination of the two. Three. Okay? It's a threefold actuality. And there's no way you can recognize that when you're looking through the tiny little pipe. Yeah, yeah, the capillary tube. Is that what you said? Yeah. okay.
The size of a pea diaper. Inner tubes. Not the last one I looked at.
But you expand that out, and what's going to happen? There's more father-likeness, more relationship to father-likeness will fit in. The word control comes into play. The father word. Not over control, but control. You can begin to be part of, you know, a controlling phenomenon on the earth, but only because you supplied the favorable conditions so that you could be grown to that ability.
Can you tell me where our civilization fits in? Are we between semi-human?
I was just going to get to that. No, they're telling you point blank. We are semi-civilized.
That's what I thought.
Beginning.
But we read just recently that we're, if we continue to try to actualize the fallacies that we show a surprising willingness to believe, that semi-civilized state is going to fall back, you know. And we're going to be mostly in the primitive mode again if we don't shape up. You know, but that's that other story. But anyhow, so that's the backstory there. But they're
tragic to record.
They're trying to again inject some humility in here. Man, the civilized will someday. Okay, it's not going to happen tomorrow. Okay, we're a far cry from man the civilized. You know, like they said, if you were to be taken to a normal world that was just in the post-pastoral age, you could not even wrap your mind around what you were experiencing. The level of civilization is beyond your wildest imaginations. Okay? You know, and that's a far cry from light and life. That's just a post-pastoral world. Okay? Okay? So, semi-civilized, and maybe put it in quotes. Okay? because of the rebellion and the fall, we're in a pretty thin, tenuous state of civilization.
What would mastery of the physical forces be?
Just that.
The weather.
Yeah. Yeah. We're none of the issues that we're constantly assaulted by are there anymore. So, you know, when you're going, natural law is so often apparently cruel, heartless, and indifferent to all that is true, beautiful, and good in human comprehension. Well, not on a world where they've mastered the physical forces. You control it. And so, you know, you don't carefully build just the perfect, you know, Edenic-like garden, and then, you know, something just mows it down. Okay?
F5 tornado.
You control. Right. You know, F5 tornadoes are not going to wipe out, you know, your, best efforts to try to bring a little bit of the harmony of heaven down onto earth. You know, you're going to be in control. And then, of course, you know, you get into the fifth stage of light and life, and you know, you've got a lot of help with this. The master physical controllers, you know, begin to take full control of the planet and the sun and everything. You know, then you really got control. You know, happening. Yeah, through science and technology. And don't just think about the external things. Think about on this planet, the last thing you want to do is make this a totally external thought. The really big uncontrolled space is the internal because of the rebellion and the default, you know, especially the default. You know, our inner nature is completely uncontrolled right now because we have so little Adamic uplift, you know, and the races haven't been blended and everything, you know, and all of the whatnot associated with that. We have to get this under control and that under control. And then and only then do you have the proper stage for the play that we can visualize with our spiritual consciousness. You know, we can visualize the acts of a grand play that have not a stage to exist on. You know, you say, well, just close your eyes and, you know, and imagine it. No. You know, that doesn't make, the stage doesn't magically come into existence. Figment will form in your mind, But fact won't form on the earth. You know, that fact has to evolve, and it has to evolve in the context of mankind very aggressively recognizing the limitations of it, and, you know, working on getting in control of it, understanding it. You know, that's why, you know, like we said, the ravages of positivism on science are really, really not helping this, because there's no hope now, until you get a reformation in science, of science doing what it needs to do to gain control of this and that, because science is beginning to be predicated on magic. And no amount of magic is going to get us what we need to know to control genetics and tornadoes.
Well, we do have cool accelerators.
Yeah. We'll make lots of cool gizmos, okay? But, you know, all of all this technology that we're doing hasn't changed our DNA one squat.
So,
yeah, go ahead then.
Okay, so we have this technology called HEART, and it's changing the atmosphere, and there's a lot of speculation and people coming forward saying that that's what's causing these major earthquakes and weather phenomenons and stuff.
But think about the flip side of that. You know, selves immediately fear control. But that kind of thing is exactly what we have to do on a grand scale. You're not going to control F5 tornadoes without taking control. Now, the problem is, if we try to do geoengineering things out of ignorance, okay, that's going to be a catastrophe. Okay. The last thing we want to do is start a geoengineering project right now in the midst of a declining science. Okay? You know, there is, if we reconsecrate ourselves to a true science, we need to very definitively begin to take control of these things. And it's not going to be some sort of hands-off thing. We're going to, control is about grabbing a hold of it, not over-control, not just sort of, you know, making sure it stays within boundaries or something. Okay, control.
How would you control a hurricane?
You're going to have to control the atmosphere. Now, there's going to be, well, I don't know. If I knew, we would be doing it right now. Okay? You know, we would be civilized instead of semi-civilized. Okay? Semi-civilized people can't control things. You know, semi-civilized people get the notion that they're going to control the Mississippi River. Okay, but they don't actually control the Mississippi River. If the Mississippi River wants to go left, the Mississippi River goes left, no matter how many, you know, dikes and whatnot you build, levees and whatnot. Okay? It's the illusion of control. It's not actual control.
Doesn't the Orange Book tell us someplace that we're
Well, of course, you know, and the big problem is the philosophic coordination of the two realities. Okay, we could be more advanced spiritually to match, you know, the advancement of technology, but they don't magically coordinate. And you know, we've pointed out a lot that that's the fifth epical revelation, the philosophical uplifting, the beginning of the philosophical uplifting. You know, a lot of the fifth epical revelation is predicated on the assumption that you have created a relationship with the fourth epical revelation, have allowed yourself to be spiritually uplifted, so that there's something really spiritual there to go with the matter that's there pretty much as a given. And now you're ready to see if you can weave them together in, you know, into a wise, harmonious construct. You know, if you haven't identified with the spiritual upliftment yet, you know, you've got that step first. You know, don't even attempt to engage what they're trying to tell you philosophically here, because it's impossible. With, you know, you can't make soul out of one set of fibers. You have to have both sets of fibers to weave together. You know, and if you try to put this new wine into old wineskins like that, you're going to get much more catastrophic things than we've ever gotten out of abusing prior epical revelation. The more they give you, the more you need to have assumed the personal responsibility and self-control, you know, have the real capacity to receive that. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be your undoing, not your wellness, or mankind's wellness. So, you know, we've talked about that before. The fifth epical revelation demands a lot of you up front. That's why, you know, in the second paragraph of the book, they point out that, you know, even at your utmost consecration, you can only reduce it from more to less distortion of meaning. Okay, and the fact that you're going to have to deal with, because you perforce serve two masters and you're semi-civilized and all this stuff, you know, you're going to have to make do with still having less distortion of meaning in play, some distortion of meaning. You know, it, all the more, you know, you should recognize that you need a lot of wisdom and you need a lot of patience. You need to go about this very methodically, very carefully, because the more you try to do good, by definition, the more potential for evil there is in play in the hands of the ignorant. You know, everyone recognizes, you know, some of the things they say in here are really facing facts that an ignorant perspective can only distort and could distort with great catastrophic consequences. You know, there's some strong stuff in here, you know, especially when you start talking about genetics and things.
So I found a quote that Joan was talking about. Mm-hmm. It's paper 110, section 6, paragraph 4. When the development of the intellectual nature proceeds faster than that of the spiritual, such a situation renders communication with the thought adjuster both difficult and dangerous.
Yeah. All you have to do is find one of those things, and guess what word is in the sentence? Danger, just like I said.
The other extreme is perverted.
Right. It's just... yeah. You know, once you see it, it's not complicated. Okay, this is very simple. You know what the sentence is going to say when you find the sentence. All right. So they're just pointing out that you know, they're kind of giving you a little bit of more of a perspective on you know, what that normal world path looks like, so that we can clearly understand what we need to be consecrating ourselves toward. You know, a normal world is going down this line. Oh, we're going down this line. Let's see if we can begin to get ourselves in alignment here. Step one, then step two. Don't try to do step two. Like I was saying, don't try to do geoengineering before you've done step one. Okay, that'll be catastrophic. Do step one, then step two. All right, and then what's step three?
Three is man's universe integration. The increase of human insight plus the increase of human experiential achievement brings him into closer harmony with the unifying presences of supremacy, paradise trinity, and supreme being. And this is what establishes the sovereignty of the supreme on the worlds long settled in light and life. Such advanced planets are indeed poems of harmony, pictures of the beauty of achieved goodness attained through the pursuit of cosmic truth. And if such things can happen to a planet, then even greater things can happen to a system, and the larger units of the grand universe as they too achieve a settledness, indicating the exhaustion of the potentials for finite growth.
Okay, so you know, just taking it all the way down the road there. Maybe just one little point, again, a technical point to bring in. Notice how they're using words. The word I'm keying off of is unifying there. Maybe, here, I hadn't thought about this, but actually if we hearken all the way back to the end of the first paper in this series here, they had, it was one of the very first times we were talking about, notice there's an and here in this sentence, so there's two words, you know, and we were noticing which side was the Almighty and which side was the Mother. And they had synthesizing and unifying deity. God the Supreme. So now God the Supreme has two facets, a synthesizing half and a unifying half, Almighty and Mother, in that order. We pointed that out at the time. The reason for that is kind of tied into what they're bringing in here. If you drop back, let's see, where was that? So we're in this paragraph. So if you go back 1, 2, 3, 4 paragraphs, if you're in the single column, it's at the bottom of the previous page. That paragraph that ends with, while the ultimate gradually emerges as the transcendental unifier of all things. Again, unifier. The reason that that's more tied, see, the Mother side than the Almighty side, is because God the Mother is coming down from the infinite through the absolute, through the absonite, through the supreme, down into the finite. So God the Mother fundamentally has this transcendent, top-down engagement. And that's why that unification, see, is being used, you know, in both of these contexts. Okay, because it's the top-down. You know, it's synthesizing from the bottom up, but it's unifying from the top down. Okay? So you have to appreciate that so that you don't distort the meaning of what they're saying here. When they say the unifying presences of supremacy, Paradise Trinity and Supreme Being, you know, they mean very top down. If you remember the precision of things, you know that Supreme Being is technically absonite, not finite. You know, that's an absonite being, not a finite being. So, you know, literally the Supreme Being, you know, you're talking top down, that's absonite down into finite, if you're talking about that relationship. Okay. You have the Trinity of Absoluteness, the Trinity of Ultimacy, the Trinity of Supremacy. It's this top-down phenomenon. Okay, so unifying. See, the word unifying immediately should put you in the proper orientation. Am I to understand what they're saying as the top-down part of the picture or the bottom-up part of the picture? You know it's a top-down. And you can see how in three totally different contexts, they are using that word unify or unifying, unification, whatever, you know, to indicate that orientation, that top-down viewpoint.
I just realized my concept of unity has kind of been backwards. In that, mm-hmm. I think of unity as the common source point. Mm-hmm. All things are unified because they all have the common source.
Yeah.
When I hear another view of unity.
Remember when we're talking about this unity here, you know, threefold actuality with unity, the unity we're talking about there is not innate unity, it's harmony. Okay? It's the harmonization of the threefold actuality. Okay, so if there is a threefold actuality, how could those three come together as one? Well, you could assume that they're magic and they just do it in and of themselves. Or, if you're thinking logically about it, by definition, there must be something above those three things that sees them as one, and hence can foster them being woven together as one. It, You know, the unification that is harmony fundamentally implies a transcendent over control of the phenomenon. You know, whether you're talking about the ultimate or the supreme being or God the Mother or, you know, whatever the context is, you're talking about something that's coming from the top down. You know, or just think of it in simple spatial terms. If you're an absonite being and you look down at finite spatial extent, the size of that space is zero. You're transcendent of that finite space. All those finite distances collapse to zero from your vantage point. So from that vantage point, how easy will it be for you to get the parts to all be, you know, intimately in contact and connected? Pretty easy, because from your vantage point, they're all together as one. See? That's, you know, just a simple, you know, logical sort of spatial way, see, to see why that unification is possible from that top down. Because you are transcendent of the differentials that divide matter, mind, and spirit, for instance. Left, right, front, back, up, down, in simple finite dimensionality. You know, never do you have just the, you know, like three bullet points, and it's just about the bullet points and just the facts. You know, there's always all kinds of other stuff. You know, every little sentence is rich with this greater picture there, so that as your capacity expands. Now, every time it expands, you can reread this paragraph and you can see more of it. You know, they've constructed every paragraph to have this bottomless, basically, depth to it. You'll have, you know, the more insight you have, the more meaning and the more value, you know, you will draw out of every paragraph that they've constructed. You know, because they've made it every paragraph three-dimensional. And so to always challenge yourself to the limits of your current capacity to see the fullness, see the three-dimensionality. 2 months from now, we're going to be expanded from our conversation right now. And we're going to see things, you know, here that we didn't see. Just like, you know, if we were to go back, imagine if we went back and read the adjuster papers now. Mm-hmm. How many more things we would see in those adjuster papers, you know, about the mother. You know, like, go back and read the psychic levels section again. Now, with all the conversations we've had, you'll see there's all the keywords are there. You'll see so many things, you know, that you didn't see there before. Because, you know, now you recognize them. It's like, oh, wow, this is much richer than I remember it. No, you know.
All papers are becoming new.
Yeah. The capacity producer, yeah, you know, has expanded your capacity. And that's that, you know, as soon as you are having that experience, you know that you're beginning to have a little relationship with the truth of the revelation, not just the fact. You know, if you're just relating to the fact, every time you come back to a paragraph, it's just like the previous time. Okay? And we've often talked about an animal that's a classic expression of that sort of cyclic character. Every time you throw the stick, it's the very first time for the dog. It's the very first time he's ever had a stick thrown for him. And he is so excited. He's beside himself. It's the most exciting thing ever, because it's the first time. Right. Every time.
It never gets old. Animals don't need new things.
Okay.
Nothing's ever old.
All right.
Groundhog Day.
Right. Don't be like that. You know, challenge yourself to never have, you know, as small an experience with a paragraph as you had the first time. Okay.
On a planet of this advanced order, providence has become an actuality. The circumstances of life are correlated, but this is not only because man has come to dominate the material problems of his world. It is also because he has begun to live according to the trend of the universes. He is following the pathway of supremacy to the attainment of the Universal Father.
So you're starting to benefit from all of that supremacy, which you might call providence, or you might call the connectivity through the individuality of the whole. You know, it could be impersonal or personal, but, you know, it's supremacy.
The kingdom of God is in the hearts of men, and when this kingdom becomes actual in the heart of every individual on a world, then God's rule has become actual on that planet. And this is the attained sovereignty of the Supreme Being. To realize providence in time, man must accomplish the task of achieving perfection. But man can even now foretaste this providence in his eternity meanings, as he ponders the universe fact that all things, be they good or evil, work together for the advancement of God-knowing mortals in their quest for the Father of all.
Just to make this a case in point, this whole bit about the logic of the vertical, you know, recognizing transcendence in a logical context. You know, everyone knows that one of the most, you know, popular stories that mankind has written about forever is when all things work toward good, you know, that all things, be they good or evil. And of course, we're not talking about absolute good here, but just down in some little limited finite context, this is good and this is evil. Doesn't matter. Why? Because there's something that transcends. Certainly transcends that evil, but even transcends that limited good. That's why that happens. If that didn't happen, you'd know there was nothing transcendent. You'd know that you actually were a flatlander. There was no vertical dimension of reality. But, you know, so they're just trying to say, just stop and think a second. You know this. This is not new. Recognize what you've always known. Now think about it logically. Use your first cosmic intuition to recognize what that implies. That implies that there absolutely is something transcendent. Or there would never have been a story written about how all things work toward good. That the most catastrophic tornado thing coincidentally found a positive outlet when all was said and done. Now, obviously not in the moment, but when all is said and done, we always notice what happens. Somehow, some way, it all goes towards good. Okay? Because it's not a flatland. Yeah, Jason.
Shouldn't there, do you think that they might be clarifying a passage out of the Bible, which a lot of us might remember, sure. All things work for the good that love God?
Yeah, you mean, I was kind of basically saying it that way, you know? Right. Like I was saying, this is nothing new. We know this. Now just ask yourself, why is that true? Don't let that passage in the Bible be a platitude. Ask yourself, why? Why is that true? And when you know why, now you have a relationship to truth and not just fact. It's not just a platitude that in difficult times you repeat desperately. Okay? You know, you're not in that mode anymore. You know, this is a good example. You know, when we talk about this insight, and you know, those three cosmic intuitions are intuitions of the Holy Spirit. Don't think of logical acumen as, well, that's just about matter stuff, and I'm not interested in that. I want to increase my relationship to God, and God's a person. And that's the logical acumen in the Holy Spirit, and it's the gateway to the mother. This whole bit about, you know, when they tell you, you know, you've got these three cosmic intuitions and you don't perforce have to develop them in order, 1, 2, 3. You can skip right over 1 and 2 and fixate on 3, you know, and make it all about more and more and more spiritual insight. Okay? But that's not going to get you a greater relationship with God the Mother. If you want to get a greater relationship with God the Mother, there's a pathway. That's how they use that. You know, it's not a random plane. You can go anywhere you want, any way you want. It's all about you, whatever. There's a pathway. There's a way, okay, that has been established. She is the way to him, okay? And her way is one, you know, ground yourself, and then reach up from that stable foundation established by that first cosmic intuition up to the third. I mean, they have to give you a little bit of disconnect between the three to begin with, because you have to have an initial an initiation of the process. And remember that faith grasp, that relationship to God the Father that initiates it. You know, he's the initiator. You know, that faith grasp happens, you know, because you have personality and through the third cosmic intuition, through that conduit that connects you. It's that initial capillary to the third cosmic intuition, you know, that your personality is acting through. Yeah. So, you know, you couldn't have it where you couldn't get to that until you'd gone up 1, 2, 3, or you couldn't get it started. So they have to have some measure of disconnect. But once you've got it initiated, now go down and very methodically start to build this up. Make a pyramid. Build it up. You know, the higher you go, the broader the foundation needs to be. If you want more spiritual insight in a stable way, you need to have more logical acumen and more moral discrimination, and then more spiritual insight.
Or it's dangerous.
Right. Or because the more and more it's you build it like this, it can fall over and crush you. It's dangerous. Okay, don't build things like that. You know, but we've got so many people like this on the planet, you know, who have just that initial tiny little, by grace alone, first cosmic intuition, you know, the common little bit of common sense, you know, and they're building this massive superstructure, you know, and eventually it just falls over and crushes them. Yeah.
Economic necessities tie man up with reality. Mm-hmm. And personal religious experience brings this same man face to face with the eternal realities of an ever expanding and progressing cosmic citizenship. So it's starting out with economic.
Why do you perforce serve two masters? Because if you didn't perforce serve two masters, everyone would immediately go. Okay. It would just be universal, self-crushing. Okay, you perforce, you know, you cannot, you know, if worse comes to worse, space and time, or time and space, maybe we should say it, is going to do it. Hunger and fear, okay? If nothing else, the existence of time and space, hunger and fear, is going to make sure that there's something going on down at the foundation. That you aren't just going to float off, you know, into figment land and try to build castles in the air. Okay, let's see. Before we jump on, let me just make sure we... I think we're... Yeah, let's... yeah, so just again, you know, noticing that, you know, we've mentioned this before, the will and the way. You know, and so when they bring in the pathway, you know, like I mentioned, you know, that's the mother, literally the upholder, the hand that is the way.
Providence becomes increasingly discernible as men reach upward from the material to the spiritual. The attainment of completed spiritual insight enables the ascending personality to detect harmony in what was theretofore chaos. Even Marantia Moda represents a real advance in this direction.
See, not detect unity, detect harmony. Right?
Providence is in part the over-control of the incomplete supreme manifested in the incomplete universes, and it must therefore ever be, 1, partial, due to the incompleteness of the actualization of the Supreme Being, and two, unpredictable, due to the fluctuations in creature attitude, which ever varies from level to level, thus causing apparently variable reciprocal response in the Supreme.
All right. yeah, apparently variable. Yeah, there's no vicissitudes in the Supreme.
No.
Okay, now, you know, there's some obvious things there, but let's penetrate a little bit deeper in some things you're saying there. Why is it? Okay, it says, Providence is in part the over-control of the incomplete Supreme, manifested in the incomplete universes. Okay, so the first thing is, okay, we now clearly recognize this, you know, this true providence is related to the to a whole. And so you need to just, it's like, well, wait a minute. If the Supreme is incomplete and the universes are incomplete, how can there be a whole? So how can there be any providence? Why is there providence in spite of the incompleteness? Fundamentally, I mean, it's related to the truth of what the superuniverse level is. It's not the imperfect domain, it's the perfecting domain. Why isn't it in truth? Yeah, in fact, it's imperfect. But why is it not in truth the imperfect domain? Why is it in truth the perfecting domain? It can't be because of the Almighty, because that's, you know, just the embodiment of the incompleteness up to that level. Okay, why is it that there is a positive aspect in the midst of the incompleteness? It's because something came down from the transcomplete, you know, into the incomplete. You know, brought down positive fact in the midst of what starts out as empty capacity, yeah. Total incompleteness. Okay, but in the midst of no things, and certainly no providence of those things, that capacity is filled by the mother before there's anything. Okay, there's providence. There's a measure of the whole. Because there's an individuality of the whole, okay, that's an antecedent following, you know, that came down from above into where we are. If all there was the Almighty Supreme, then the superuniverses would be the imperfect domain in truth. But there's not just the Almighty Supreme. There's the Universal Mother. She's the truth. It's a perfecting domain. And, you know, so just, you know, to recognize why there's providence, it's because of the mother.
Maybe everybody else had an understanding of what the word providence means.
Mm-hmm.
But I went and looked it up. Because I wondered, well, what does this word really mean? And I think if I remember the dictionary definition, it was the care and, I'm quite sure about the second word, control, maybe, by the creator for the creature. Care and, so what would you give us as...
But what man calls providence, i.e. what you look up in the dictionary,
mm-hmm.
Is all too often the product of his own imagination. Okay.
I have a definition.
Yeah.
And I just looked it up on Webster. It's divine guidance or care guiding human destiny.
That's not it.
That's not it.
It's not. You can't look up the true meaning in the dictionary. You know, I keep trying to stress this. I mean, the whole point, you know, of having this section is to reveal that there is a true providence, and it's not in the dictionary. Just like there's true spirit, it's not in the dictionary. There's true personality, it's not in the dictionary. There's true truth, it's not in the dictionary, et cetera, et cetera. it's the fifth epical revelation. It's a revelation that what has long seemed to be a human fabrication of wishful thinking, that God the micromanager, you know, is doing the little micromanagement thing, and he's doing it because it's about you. Remember what they, you know, what they said back there? It is the importance of the function of the creature that occasions providential intervention, not the importance of the creature as a person. Okay? It's not about you as an individual. It's not even about you in your individual relationship with God the Father. Okay? Providence is about the whole. And that there's an individuality of a whole. There's a functioning of the whole. There's a focalizer, a coordinate actor, that imposes herself down upon the things. And hence, when you, the more you have a view of the subtleties of the things, the more you can see that coincidentally the things seem to be coordinated. They seem to have a conspiracy of working together going on. Okay? It's not because the micromanager, you know, has created that experience, that conspiracy. It's not because the things are magical. You know, so it's not mysticism's not the answer either. It's because there's an individuality of the whole. She binds all things together into one, to the limits of what you can at this current level of factual incompleteness.
When John was giving her a definition, it sounded like there was a lot of truth in that particular definition, right. Because it sounded to me like she was describing a nurturing mother's hand of holding, like a big nursery or something of love, whatever, you know, and just upholding it and doing her thing.
Yep.
You know, if you picture a real busy nursery or something, the mother can uphold that and do her best with, you know, keeping the basics coordinated and making sure that there, you know, are things when they're half to do things sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, coordinating that stuff. But she certainly with a huge nursery, you know, you don't micromanage.
Right.
You know,
right.
I thought that.
Right. It's over control, not control.
I thought that particular definition was very good.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, I was just gonna bring that up. You know, the first step is to know that any definition in a dictionary is going to be limited. But that doesn't mean that it's going to be wholly wanton. Okay? Might be, but often there's a thread of truth. You know, and so if you let the revelators reform the notion of providence in your mind and take that true understanding, and then go back to the dictionary, it's like, oh, you know, there is a little thread. If I kind of, you know, a little bit there, a little bit, yeah, but that, okay, that's all kind of goofy. But, you know, you can see the little threads, but they're often really tenuous. And like I pointed out, I mean, a lot of times the definitions themselves are quite limited. The etymology, you know, the literal meaning might have a lot more of the thread of the true meaning. You often, you know, can look to that etymology to and go, oh, you know, yeah, that's more in line. And, you know, that's why, if there wasn't a thread of truth about the historical notion of providence, that they could pick up on and expand in an evolutional fashion. See, they wouldn't use that word for anything true. Okay? It's because there's a little thread of truth, no matter how tenuous, there. may be completely invisible until you have your eyes opened by the revelation, but it's there nonetheless. They're grabbing a hold of that little thread and they're saying, draw that out. That little thread is the truth. And there's a reality in the universe that that little thread is tied to. Now let go of all your superstitions and your bias to the Father perspective, you know, and whatnot that might be clouding it. You know? So it's just like the Bible. You know, the Bible can, the truth of the Bible can come alive once you have an expanded capacity and can see it in that bigger context. The roadblocks of ignorance are not roadblocks anymore. You easily go over them or around them, you know, and can see the flows of truth through it. All right. Let's see, what else do we have here? So this incomplete supreme, I just wanted to stress that thing, you know, the fact that the supreme is part the Almighty and part the Mother. So when you say the incomplete supreme, how exactly does that work? On the Almighty side, you know, more the parts side, okay, you have an incomplete set of parts. It's very direct. When you're talking about the incompleteness of the Supreme as the Almighty. Okay? But the incompleteness of the Supreme as a Mother is a different thing. It's not like the Mother is missing parts. Mother is not about parts. Mother is the individuality of the whole. There's an incompleteness of the unification potential. You know, that's inherent in the Mother. If for no other reason, it obviously can't, she can't completely unify everything because there isn't a complete set of things to unify yet. You know, so how could the fullness of that, of the focalizer be in play? How could the fullness of that coordinate action be in play yet? Okay. But never, you know, to take that, think of the incompleteness on that side in a bottom-up point of view, because she is not the bottom-up phenomenon. She's a top-down. So it's an incompleteness of engagement, you know, of that personal purposive facet. If for no other reason, she has all the fingers she needs to get a hold of everything, but there aren't enough things to touch yet. You know? Yeah. She can touch the five things that are there, but there isn't the other five things in existence yet. Yeah. So, again, because that there isn't that literal, factual incompleteness in the nature of the Mother, that's why there can be providence in spite of the incompleteness. let's see, so, okay, and then those two parts, what we were just talking about is basically the incompleteness of the actualization of the Supreme Being. The unpredictable part, remember, we brought that in. You know, that's bringing in the apparently variable reciprocal response in the Supreme. That's the Supreme Mind. Remember when we talked about that? How you think about down here in the finite, we have all this free will, you know, and so there's this flux of choice, you know, in the creatures. You know, it's in constant flux. But no matter how much the flux, nothing is ever beyond the adaptability of the Supreme Mind. Okay, so...
Was that a literal reciprocation? Or is it just already anticipated?
No, you really want to think of it. I mean, you know, when you're thinking of it from a temporal perspective, as a temporal being... the truth is, it's right there in the moment. And also, you notice how they said level the level? You know, when you bring up the cosmic levels here on this chart, you know, that think of that Supreme Mind as percolating down through those sub-supreme levels. You know, and so on each level, you have a downstepped expression of that adaptability that's commensurate with the kind of things that happen at that level. Sometimes the actual Supreme Mind, you know, sort of as the Supreme Mind might have to to do it, because it really, it involves the whole picture. You know, it's not just kind of localized to a lower level. But thus causing apparently variable reciprocal response. You know, again, it's apparently variable because of our limited viewpoint. If we could see it from the top-down viewpoint, there's no variation at all. You know, it's this rock-solid purposing, you know, being expressed through mind, you know, and adapting to whatever rearrangement of the facts that occurs, be they material facts or personal facts. You know, even to the point of a variation in the personal facts of this person chose iniquity. You know, even that extreme variation in a personal fact is not, you know, not beyond the adaptability. So it doesn't have to be, you know, any sort of simplistic predestination, even all the way to that end. Okay.
So they say it that way,
yeah,
for our benefit.
Yeah, yeah. It appears from your limited viewpoint. The fact that limited viewpoint is individuality, is bottom up. That makes it really hard for you to see the supreme mind, because the supreme mind is very much, I mean, it's the supreme mind of the supreme being. It's an absonite thing, you know. So it's very fundamentally, you know, not something that you can see. That's why, you know, it's kind of always sort of a, oh, and by the way, don't forget about that third thing. You know how so often as we've gone through this, you know, we talk about the Almighty, we talk about the Mother. Yeah, but there is that third thing. It's just, it's the most tenuous for us to really grasp, especially at this very low and very early stage of the evolution of the grand universe. The Supreme Mind is a very, very subtle thing. Okay. All right.
When men pray for providential intervention in the circumstances of life, many times the answer to their prayer is their own changed attitudes toward life. But providence is not whimsical, neither is it fantastic nor magical. It is the slow and sure emergence of the mighty sovereign of the finite universes, whose majestic presence the evolving creatures occasionally detect in their universe progressions. Providence is the sure and certain march of the galaxies of space and the personalities of time toward the goals of eternity, first in the supreme, then in the ultimate, and perhaps in the absolute. And in infinity, we believe there is the same providence. And this is the will, the actions, the purpose of the Paradise Trinity, thus motivating the cosmic panorama of universes upon universes, sponsored by a mighty messenger temporarily sojourning on Urantia.
Okay, now, got a little bit more on providence. You know, providence is there. I think the one thing I want to bring out of this, though, is the way they choose to end this. They chose to end this paper with a statement that really has no way of being directly understood without all the work that we've done in putting together total deity. Okay, did it, you know, strike you as a little odd? It's like, well, I don't immediately understand what's going on here. What do they mean? The will, the actions, the purpose of the Paradise Trinity? You know, are they talking somehow about Father, Son, Spirit? It's like, well, no, it seem like it. I could maybe rationalize that from my Seven Absolutes of Infinity viewpoint. But what's really going on there? Before I do that, okay, go ahead.
Well, the will is the Father, Universal Father. The purpose is the Mother. And I would tend to think that the actions are the Mother also. That's the Almighty. But the Mother incorporates the Almighty.
Let's see, but technically the will is the infinite one, not the Father. And see, you know, see, the, you know, like I said, you know, you can kind of feel like, well, maybe I could rationalize that. You know, I could give you a little rationalization scheme where I could point to the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. But rather than doing that,
that's not what it's saying.
Let's back up. You know, a little bit, and see if you can see a bigger perspective. What did we discover when we finally put together total deity? We discovered that we could understand all of these different facets of deity. There's this huge pile of them, based upon seeing that the threefold facets of the I Am. You know, the deity, the I Am, that those three were the foundation of a logical understanding of all the facets of deity. Remember the infinite one, the infinitude, and the infinity. The infinite one, the infinitude, and the infinity. I am that which acts. I am that which reacts. I am that which results. In other words, the universe is fundamentally causal, logical. That's a foundation recognition. If you start with that assumption, you know, made literal in those three expressions of deity, the infinite one, the infinitude, and the infinity, then everything else is built upon them. You know, and we gave them numbers, 1, 2, 3. The infinite one, the infinitude, the infinity, 1, 2, 3. Okay. And we discovered that all the other facets of deity were either relationships, either one of the seven relationships between 1, 2, and 3, or one of the seven direct expressions of 1, 2, 3. And that gave us all 14 of the facets. Okay. Now, when we did that, we recognized that the universal one of infinity, you know, one face of which is the Paradise Trinity, that the universal one of infinity, self-contained deity, that facet of deity was represented by the relationship of 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 1. That it was that, you know, that relationship with all three in play. The relationship of that which acts to that which reacts to that which results back to that which acts. Okay? And in a circular fashion like that through all three. Three things here. Okay? There's three things in this list. Okay? Because the Paradise Trinity, you know, it comes from this threefold relationship, 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 1. So let's just say that relationship like this. So I can start anywhere, you know, around the circle of relationship here, and just go around the circle. If I start at 3, the infinity, I am that which results. Yeah, so start there with the results. Okay, so you're, the first, you know, relationship is 3 to 1. And then we'll do 1 to 2, 2 to 3. Okay, so the relationship 3 to 1. Predicated on the desired results, that which acts has the will to act. Predicated on the desired results, that which acts has the will to act. On that which reacts, which gives that action, or those actions, a causal nature, which gives that which results purpose. That's where those three come from. You're going around the nature of the universal one of infinity. Predicated on the desired results, that which acts has the will to act on that which reacts, which gives those actions a causal nature, which gives that which results purpose. Okay? That's what that's saying. That's self-contained deity. 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 1. Okay, you know, and think about that giving that which results purpose, how that ties back to that statement they made back here about the purposing of mechanisms, if I can find it, right here. But the purposiveness of any mechanism, something that results, is in its origin, not in its function. See? And we just to get to that purpose, we had to go through the fullness of the origin here in this facet of the original Paradise Trinity. Yeah. The will, the actions, the purpose. Yeah.
Is that why Jesus, especially when he started his public ministry, he was always wanting to do things, he was in the habit of doing things in the will of God. It is the will of God. You know? But then things started happening to where he had to contemplate afterwards, well, was that in the will of God? They just happened. And I'm thinking it's because he was deity at that point. And so therefore, God was okaying it even before he realized it. And
right.
The Father was okaying it before he realized it, and then his human mind just had to catch up with that.
Yeah, I mean, certainly. It's another example of, you know, even in the case of Jesus as true man, no matter how true that man is not deity. And that man is catching up in terms of consciousness with where deity already is. that true man is has to, in retrospect, basically, you know, a lot of times become aware of this providence, or even, you know, some higher expression of deity of the whole. You know, the fundamental characteristic of deity is unity. Okay, see, so yeah, I mean, that's another angle at this. You know, that even Jesus, the extent to which he took human nature to its possible limits. You know, at that, you know, 2,000 years ago. There's still this issue that you only are aware of growth after the fact, you know, all those sorts of things like that, see? Because who grows you? The mother grows you. Your individuality viewpoint has a really tough time to really have a full awareness in the moment, especially early on. After the fact, you can kind of flip it around and look at it top down and recognize the growth, you know, or go, oh, the Father was already ahead of me on that, or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever sort of functioning of everything together and as a unified system, you know, happens to be in play. All right, so they end on that note where, you know, if you're ready for it, it's got a very technical, engagement to the understanding of total deity. So it's kind of an appropriate crescendo before we move into the fifth, the final paper in this series of five, which, like we pointed out, seems like a bit of a non sequitur, especially considering what the last thing was that we just said about this paper. We're talking about, you know, the universal one of infinity and all this stuff, and then you flip the page and what do you have? the bestowals of Christ Michael. It's like, whoa, whoa, I mean, what the, what's the linkage there? Okay. It's part of the series, and you'll really appreciate that once we get to the end of this next paper. What they're doing is kind of what they do with parts 1, 2, and 3 relative to part 4. They're giving an example that you can more directly relate to. So they're giving some knowledge, some how-to, relative to what we've just been talking about, which has certainly had a tendency to be a bit abstract and conceptual at times. They're going to do this to try to help bring this home, you know, to use the bestowals of Christ Michael as an example of thinking about this relationship to the Supreme and the Mother, you know, and these issues that go beyond the Father. Yeah, he's revealing God the Father, but that's only part of the story of why he's bestowing himself. And what's the rest of the story? And the rest of the story is he's doing something as well as being something. Okay? And having done what he does, he goes from merely being a creator's son to being a master's son. Okay? So this augmented relationship with the rest of the picture expands who he is. Okay? See? So that's the point of this, in this, you know, how this fits into the series. And so we'll be definitely looking for that as we go through. Besides the obvious things of really trying to get a better appreciation for the sequence of the 7 bestowals and how that gives you a better appreciation before you go into part 4. All right, so let's take a little moment and we'll pick up there next time.